A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. So as I mentioned in the last couple of prompts, getting our place totally in order, room by room, making sure we're ready to move in a couple of months. And I was in, you know, doing the bathroom tidy up yesterday and finally got my water flosser together. I've bought about 3 water flossers over the years. And what keeps happening is, you know, that little pack of like the heads and the charger and the flosser itself. So they kind of just wander. I imagine them in the middle of the night, just kind of walking into the drawer in different places. And I say, wait, where's the charger gone for this thing? And this is how I've gone through 3 water flossers. Number one actually broke down. But so yesterday I kind of finally, I got everything matched up and I said, great, I have my flosser together now. Between this point and when it broke, I've gone back to manual flossing. With those little toothpick things that are discardable. And you know that I'm not a fan of discardable anything. It makes me feel bad about the environmental impact. And I really have always enjoyed using the water flossers. So I have a few questions for you, Herman and Corin. Number one, I feel like in terms of things that we chronically underinvest in, toothbrushes and anything keeping our teeth in good nick has to be at the top of the list. I have a, you know, basic Oral-B electric toothbrush, but given how much effort I put into looking up specs and saving up for tech products that I want, if I put even a quarter of the same energy into electric toothbrushes, I probably wouldn't have, you know, the one that just was on the shelf at the pharmacy. And so too for oral flossers. I suspect that you want to actually do a bit of research here. And I think I just went upon what was selling well on Amazon. Herman and Corin, I'd love to get a few specifics here. Number one, how often can or should you use these things? Number two, what does the evidence look like if there is evidence? And if there is evidence, Herman Poppleberry, trust me, we'll find it. Comparing the use of traditional flossing tools versus the electric kind, and lest there be any ambiguity, I'm referring to those products that shoot a stream of water into your gums and between your teeth. And finally, if one were to say, yes, I do want to get a quality flosser, what would you be looking for in terms of both the spec and in terms of trusted manufacturers? As you know, my preference over the years has shifted from who makes the best flossers with all these features to who makes flossers that actually don't break down before you've finished flossing your teeth? Who makes flossers that are actually durable in quality? Because I feel like in an era that's increasingly saturated with fake reviews and affiliate reviews and, you know, impossibly cheap products being flooded on the market with these little enticements to leave us a 5-star review, strangely, I find myself increasingly falling back to the purchasing logic of our parents, which is probably something like, is Philips a good brand? And going from there. So who would you trust if you were looking for a decent, well-made product? What would you be expecting to pay approximately? Herman and Corin, let's talk about water flossers in today's episode of My Word Prompts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's honestly the most Daniel prompt we've had in a while. He's been doing this whole apartment organization thing, room by room, and he finally got his water flosser reassembled after the charger. And hence had apparently been wandering around his drawers like some kind of tiny nomadic tribe. But the real question here is bigger than one guy's bathroom drawer. He's asking whether we all chronically underinvest in the stuff that keeps our teeth in good shape, whether water flossers actually work compared to string floss, what the evidence says, and if you're going to buy one, who actually makes a durable product in an era of fake reviews and disposable everything. And he specifically wants Herman Poppleberry to dig into the research.
Which I'm absolutely going to do. But first, I should mention, fun fact. DeepSeek V4 Pro is writing our script today, which feels appropriate for a topic about precision and discipline. Now, Daniel's question hits on something I've been quietly annoyed about for years. People will spend weeks researching which phone to buy, reading spec sheets, watching teardown videos, comparing benchmarks, and then they'll grab whatever toothbrush is on the end cap at the pharmacy. It's completely backwards. Your phone lasts 3 years. Your teeth have to last your entire life.
The cost of getting it wrong is slightly higher than a slow processor.
A single dental implant runs somewhere between $3,000 and $6,000. A crown is around $1,500, and those are the prices when things go well. So Daniel's instinct that we underinvest here is dead right. But let's get into the specifics he asked for. First question, how often can or should you use a water flosser? The short answer is once a day, same as traditional flossing. The American Dental Association doesn't distinguish between the two in terms of frequency. The longer answer is that water flossers are actually gentler than string floss in some ways, so you could theoretically use one after every meal without damaging your gums, but nobody's recommending that because it's overkill and you'd spend half your day at the bathroom sink.
The water bill. Though I suppose compared to dental implant costs, it's a rounding error.
The real question underneath Daniel's first question is whether water flossers actually do what they claim, and this is where the evidence gets genuinely interesting. I pulled up a bunch of the clinical literature, and the picture is much clearer than I expected it to be. There was a systematic review published in the Journal of Clinical Periodontology that looked at water flossers versus string floss for reducing plaque and gingivitis. And water flossers came out ahead on both measures, not just equivalent, ahead.
I would have guessed equivalent at best. What's the mechanism?
This is the part that surprised me. String floss is great at mechanically scraping plaque off the tooth surface where it makes direct contact. But it doesn't do much for the subgingival area, the pocket just below the gum line. A water flosser, because it's pushing a pressurized stream, actually flushes bacteria out of those pockets. There was a study from the University of Southern California, USC, that found water flossing reduced bleeding on probing by up to 93% compared to string floss, which was around 33% reduction. That's a massive difference.
93%. That's the kind of number that makes you wonder why dentists aren't just handing these out at the front desk.
Some of them are, actually, but the resistance comes from a couple of places. One is habit. Dentists were trained to recommend string floss for decades, and changing clinical practice takes time. The other is that not all water flossers are equal. A cheap one with poor pressure control can actually damage gum tissue if you're not careful, so the recommendation isn't universal. But the evidence base has shifted pretty dramatically in the last 10 years. There was another study, this one from the University of Nebraska, that compared water flossing plus manual brushing versus manual brushing plus string floss. The water flosser group had significantly lower plaque scores and less gingival inflammation after 4 weeks. And these weren't tiny sample sizes either. The Nebraska study had over 100 participants.
When Daniel asks whether there's evidence, the answer is yes, and it's not ambiguous.
Not ambiguous at all. And I want to be clear about what we're talking about here, because Daniel specifically said he's referring to the devices that shoot a stream of water between your teeth and into your gums. Not air flossers, which use bursts of air and micro droplets, not those little interdental brushes, not string floss. Water flossers, sometimes called oral irrigators. The brand most people know is Waterpike. They basically own the category. But there are other players now. Philips has a line, Oral-B has a line, and then there's a whole ecosystem of no-name brands on Amazon that Daniel is rightly suspicious of.
Let's talk about that suspicion, because I think it's the most interesting part of his prompt. He said he's increasingly falling back on the purchasing logic of our parents, which is, basically, is Philips a good brand, and going from there. And his reasoning is that the market is saturated with fake reviews, affiliate-driven recommendations, and impossibly cheap products that offer you a $5 gift card to leave 5 stars.
He's not wrong to be suspicious. The fake review problem on Amazon has gotten out of control. There was a report from FakeSpot, the review analysis company, that estimated something like 40% of reviews in certain product categories are unreliable or outright fraudulent. Oral care is particularly vulnerable because it's not a category where most people have strong brand preferences or deep knowledge. You buy a toothbrush, it seems fine, you leave a review, but you have no basis for comparison. You don't know if it's actually cleaning well because you can't see subgingival plaque.
You're not going to do a split-mouth study in your bathroom.
So Daniel's instinct to look for trusted manufacturers is smart, and I want to give him a framework for thinking about this, not just a list of brands. When you're evaluating a water flosser for durability, there are a few things that actually matter. The first is the pump mechanism. Cheaper units use a diaphragm pump that wears out. Better ones use a piston pump. Waterpik uses piston pumps in their higher-end models. The second thing is the pressure regulation. You want consistent pressure across the full reservoir. Cheap ones will fluctuate, which is annoying and also less effective. The third thing is the hose and handle connection. This is where most failures happen. The hose gets kinked, the connection point cracks, water leaks, the pressure drops, and you've got a paperweight.
Daniel mentioned he's gone through 3 water flossers. I'm guessing hose failure was involved in at least one of those.
It's the most common failure mode, and I'm sorry, I know we're not supposed to say failure mode, but that's literally what it is. The hose connection is where these things break. Now, on the question of who to trust, Waterpik is the obvious answer, and for good reason. They've been making these since 1962. They hold a ton of patents. Their customer service is actually responsive. But there's a nuance here that Daniel will appreciate. Waterpik makes models at several price points, and the jump from their entry level to their mid-range is where you get most of the durability gains. The Waterpik Aquarius, which is their workhorse model, has a 3-year warranty. Their cheapest model, the ION, has a 1-year warranty. That tells you something about what they expect from the hardware.
What about Philips? You mentioned them specifically.
Philips entered the water flosser market with their Sonicare line, and their approach is different. They use a microbubble technology where the water stream contains tiny air bubbles that supposedly burst on contact and help disrupt plaque. The evidence for the microbubble thing specifically is thinner than the evidence for water flossing generally. There's some in vitro data, but not a lot of clinical head-to-head comparisons. That said, Philips' build quality is generally excellent. Their Sonicare Power Flosser is well-reviewed for durability. The handle is sealed better than most competitors, but you pay for it. The Philips unit is typically around $100, whereas the Waterpik Aquarius is around $70.
Philips is the safe parental choice brand, and the logic holds up, but you're paying a premium for the brand name without necessarily getting better clinical outcomes.
That's my read. Waterpik has the deeper evidence base because they've been funding and supporting clinical research for decades. Most of the studies I found that show water flossers beating string floss were done with Waterpik devices. That doesn't mean Philips is worse, it means we have less data. If Daniel wants to be evidence-driven in his purchase, Waterpik is the move. If he wants build quality and is willing to pay extra for the Philips ecosystem because he already uses a Sonicare toothbrush and likes having one charger on the counter, that's also defensible.
Let's talk about price expectations, because he asked about that directly. What should he expect to pay for something durable?
The sweet spot for a countertop water flosser that won't break in 18 months is between $60 and $90. Below $50, you're in the danger zone. Those are the ones with weak pumps, thin plastic on the reservoir, and hose connections that will crack. Above $120, you're paying for features that don't matter much for cleaning effectiveness. 10 pressure settings instead of 7. A slightly quieter motor. A nicer finish on the plastic. None of that affects your gums.
What about the cordless travel models? Daniel's about to move, and I can see him being tempted by something compact.
I'm glad you brought this up, because this is where a lot of people get burned. Cordless water flossers are less powerful than countertop models. That's just physics. The battery can't drive a pump as strong as a wall-powered unit. They're also less durable because the battery degrades, and once the battery goes, the whole thing is trash unless you're comfortable doing surgery on a sealed unit. If Daniel wants a travel flosser as a secondary device, fine. But as a primary daily driver, he should get a countertop model. The Waterpik Aquarius one mentioned, or the Waterpik Professional, which is basically the same internals with a slightly larger reservoir and a quieter motor. Those are the ones that last.
I want to go back to something you said about the evidence. You mentioned that water flossers reduce bleeding on probing by up to 93%. That's an enormous number. What's the clinical significance of bleeding on probing? Is that just a proxy for gum health? Or is it directly meaningful?
It's directly meaningful. Bleeding on probing is the cardinal sign of gingival inflammation. Healthy gums don't bleed when you poke them. If your gums bleed when you floss, that's not because you're flossing too hard, it's because you have gingivitis in that area. The bleeding is your body's inflammatory response to the bacteria that have been sitting there. So when a water flosser reduces bleeding by 93%, what that's really saying is it's resolving gingivitis in those sites. And gingivitis, if left untreated, progresses to periodontitis, which is when the inflammation moves deeper and you start losing bone around your teeth. That's irreversible. You can't grow that bone back.
The water flosser isn't just a convenience thing. It's potentially preventing disease progression that string floss might miss.
That's the clinical argument, and I want to be careful not to overstate it. String floss is still better than nothing. If you're string flossing daily and doing it correctly, wrapping the floss around each tooth in a C shape and going below the gum line, you're doing good things for your oral health. The problem is that almost nobody flosses correctly. Studies on flossing technique show that most people just snap the floss between their teeth and call it done. They're not getting subgingival at all. A water flosser is more forgiving of poor technique because the water finds its way into the pocket regardless.
The best tool is the one you'll actually use correctly. And if water flossers are both more effective when used properly and harder to use improperly, that's a pretty compelling case.
There's also an adherence angle here. People are more likely to stick with water flossing than string flossing. There was a study in the Journal of Clinical Dentistry that followed patients over 6 months and found that adherence was significantly higher in the water flosser group. Part of that is the novelty factor, but part of it is that water flossing is just less fiddly. You don't have to wrap floss around your fingers until they turn purple. You don't have to reach into the back of your mouth with both hands. You just point the tip and let the water do the work.
Which matters if you're someone like me with claws instead of hands.
I was going to say, your manual dexterity is not optimized for string floss.
It's really not. But even for humans with fully opposable thumbs, the back molars are awkward. So I can see why adherence would be higher.
For people with braces, bridges, or implants, water flossers are dramatically better. String floss can't get under a bridge at all. You need floss threaders or super floss, and it's a whole production. A water flosser just blasts everything out from underneath. For orthodontic patients, it's not even a comparison. Water flossers win hands down.
Daniel's instinct to go back to water flossing is well supported. Let's address the environmental concern he raised, because that's clearly bothering him. He said he doesn't like disposable anything, and those little plastic floss picks make him feel bad.
He's right to feel bad. Those things are an environmental nightmare. They're made of mixed materials, the plastic handle, and the nylon floss, so they can't be recycled. They're too small for most municipal recycling systems to capture anyway. They end up in landfills or oceans. A water flosser has an upfront environmental cost in manufacturing, but over years of use, it's almost certainly lower impact than going through hundreds of plastic floss picks. The tips do need to be replaced. Waterpik recommends every 3 to 6 months, but that's 4 tips a year versus 365 picks. The math is not complicated.
The water usage? I imagine some people hear water flosser and picture gallons going down the drain.
The reservoir on a standard countertop model holds about 22 ounces, which is roughly 650 milliliters. A typical flossing session uses most of that reservoir. So you're talking about maybe a liter of water per day for a family if multiple people are using it. That's less than a single toilet flush. The environmental impact of the water is negligible compared to the plastic waste from disposable alternatives.
All right, let's get concrete for Daniel. If he's going to buy one this week, what should he actually get?
If I were buying for myself and durability was my top concern, I'd get the Waterpik Aquarius. Model number WP6660 or WP663, depending on the color. It's been on the market for years, it's got a 3-year warranty, the pump is proven, replacement tips are widely available and not expensive. It has 7 pressure settings, which is plenty. The reservoir is large enough that you don't have to refill mid-session. It's around $70, sometimes less if you catch a sale. That's the boring, reliable answer.
That's the Toyota Camry of water flossers.
It's not exciting. Nobody's going to ask you about it at a dinner party. But it will work, and it will keep working. Now, if Daniel wanted to spend more, the Waterpik Professional, model WP900, has a slightly larger reservoir and a quieter motor. It's around $90. The extra $20 gets you a nicer user experience, but no real improvement in cleaning effectiveness. If you wanted to spend less, the Waterpik ION is around $50, but it only has a 1-year warranty and the build quality is noticeably cheaper. I wouldn't go below that.
If he wants the Philips.
Philips Sonicare Power Flosser, model HX3806 or HX3826. Around $100. Excellent build quality, the microbubble thing is interesting if unproven, and it integrates with the Sonicare ecosystem if he already has a Sonicare toothbrush. The magnetic charger is nice. The reservoir is a little smaller than the water pick, which means you might need to refill if you're thorough. But it's a solid device, I wouldn't talk anyone out of it.
What about the Oral-B option?
Oral-B has the Water Flosser Advanced, and honestly, it's fine. It's not better than the water pick, it's not cheaper. And Oral-B's expertise is really in mechanical brushing, not water flossing. They entered this market to have a product in the category, not because they had some innovation. I'd skip it unless there's a specific feature you want that only they offer.
The recommendation is Water Pick Aquarius, around $70, countertop model. Skip the cordless, skip the no-name Amazon brands, and don't overthink it.
That's the core recommendation. But I want to add one thing that I think gets overlooked in these discussions. The water flosser itself matters less than the technique and consistency. You can buy the most expensive unit on the market, and if you use it once a week, it's not doing anything. The evidence for water flossing is based on daily use. That's the protocol. And the technique matters too. You're supposed to start on a low pressure setting and work your way up, especially if your gums are inflamed. You lean over the sink, place the tip at a 90 degree angle to the gum line, and pause briefly between each tooth. You're not power washing a driveway. You're irrigating a delicate biological system.
That's a good reminder. And it connects back to something Daniel said about underinvesting. It's not just underinvesting money, it's underinvesting attention. People spend more time researching their next Netflix show than learning how to take care of their gums.
The consequences are wildly asymmetrical. You can recover from a bad TV show. You can't recover from periodontitis. Once that bone is gone, it's gone. So spending $70 on a good water flosser and 10 minutes learning how to use it properly is one of the highest return investments you can make in your health. It's just not glamorous, so nobody talks about it.
Let's talk about the fake review problem a bit more, because Daniel raised it, and I think it's worth unpacking. He said he's falling back on, is Philips a good brand? As a heuristic, is that actually a good approach in 2026?
It's better than sorting by average star rating on Amazon, I'll tell you that much. The fake review economy has gotten so sophisticated that even savvy consumers get fooled. There are companies now that will send you a product for free in exchange for a review, and they don't technically tell you to leave 5 stars, but they heavily imply it. There are review rings where people coordinate to upvote each other's reviews. There are AI-generated reviews that are getting harder to distinguish from real ones. In that environment, falling back on brand reputation isn't naive, it's rational. Philips and Waterpik have too much to lose by selling garbage. They have regulatory relationships. They have liability exposure. They have distribution deals with dental offices. A no-name brand that popped up 6 months ago and will disappear in 6 more months has none of that.
The parental logic of buy the name brand actually holds up under scrutiny.
In this category, yes, but I'd refine it slightly. It's not just buy the name brand. It's buy the name brand that specializes in this specific thing. Philips is a giant conglomerate that makes everything from MRI machines to air fryers. Waterpik makes water flossers. That's what they do. They also make shower heads, which is basically the same technology applied to a different orifice, but the point stands. When a company's entire reputation rests on one product category, they tend to be more careful about that category.
That's a good distinction. All right, I think we've covered Daniel's questions pretty thoroughly. Use it once a day. The evidence strongly supports water flossing over string flossing for gum health. Buy a Waterpik Aquarius for around $70 if you want the evidence. Backed, durable option, and don't fall for the cordless trap. Anything we missed?
Daniel mentioned his previous water flosser actually broke down, not just lost its charger. And I want to talk about why that happens, because it's preventable. Most water flosser failures come from mineral buildup. If you have hard water, and Daniel lives in Jerusalem, which has extremely hard water, the minerals will eventually clog the pump and the tip. The fix is simple. Once a month, run a solution of white vinegar and water through the unit. Fill the reservoir with 1 part vinegar to 3 parts water, run it until empty, then run a full reservoir of clean water to rinse. That'll dissolve the mineral deposits and extend the life of the pump significantly.
That's a useful tip. And it's the kind of thing that nobody reads in the manual, because nobody reads manuals.
I read manuals.
I know you do. You're the only one.
The manual for the Waterpik Aquarius specifically recommends this. It's in the maintenance section. Most people skip it, their unit clogs after 18 months, they think it broke, and they buy a new one. A little vinegar would have saved them $70.
Daniel's 3 water flossers might have been 2 more than he needed if he'd known about the vinegar trick.
Though to be fair, some of the cheaper units really do just break. The pump seals fail, and no amount of vinegar will fix a torn seal. That's another argument for buying quality up front.
I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier about adherence. You said people stick with water flossing more than string flossing. Do we know why? Is it just that it's easier, or is there something else going on?
There's actually some interesting behavioral research on this. One factor is that water flossing provides immediate feedback. You see the debris coming out from between your teeth. You feel the water on your gums. String flossing is more abstract. You're scraping something you can't see, and the only feedback is maybe a little blood on the floss, which is discouraging. Water flossing is more sensorially rewarding. It feels like it's working. That's a powerful motivator for habit formation.
That makes sense. It's the same reason people like electric toothbrushes with timers and pressure sensors. The feedback loop is tighter.
And there's another factor. String flossing can be painful if you have gingivitis. Your gums are inflamed and sensitive, and running a piece of nylon through them hurts. So you avoid it, which makes the gingivitis worse, which makes it hurt more next time. It's a vicious cycle. Water flossing is gentler on inflamed tissue. You can start at a low pressure and gradually increase as your gums get healthier. It breaks that cycle.
It's not just more effective clinically. It's also easier to adopt behaviorally. That's a rare combination in health interventions.
It really is. Usually the things that work best are the hardest to stick with. Water flossing is one of the few cases where the more effective option is also the more pleasant one. That's worth paying attention to.
Yet most people still use string floss, if they floss at all. What's the barrier? Is it just cost?
Cost is part of it. $70 up front feels like a lot compared to $3 for a pack of floss. But over 5 years, the water flosser is cheaper per use. It's just that the cost is front-loaded. There's also a counter space issue. A water flosser takes up real estate on your bathroom counter, and if you're already cramped, that's a real constraint. And honestly, I think a lot of people just don't know these exist. They've seen them in the dental aisle, but they don't know what they do or why they'd want one. The category has a marketing problem.
It doesn't help that they're called water flossers. That name makes it sound like a gimmicky alternative to the real thing, when actually it might be the real thing.
Some dentists are starting to use the term oral irrigator instead, which is more clinical and maybe more accurate. But Waterpik spent decades building the water flosser brand, so that's what stuck.
All right, let's bring this home for Daniel. He's got a basic Oral-B electric toothbrush that he grabbed off the pharmacy shelf. You mentioned earlier that people underinvest in toothbrushes too. Should he be upgrading that as well?
He didn't ask, but since we're here, yes. The evidence for electric toothbrushes over manual is overwhelming. A Cochrane review, which is the gold standard for medical evidence synthesis, found that electric toothbrushes reduce plaque by 21% and gingivitis by 11% compared to manual brushing after 3 months. And within electric toothbrushes, oscillating rotating heads, which is what Oral-B uses, perform slightly better than sonic brushes, which is what Philips Sonicare uses. The difference is small, but it's there. If Daniel has a basic Oral-B electric, he's already doing better than a manual brusher. But the entry-level Oral-B models lack a pressure sensor, which is important because brushing too hard causes gum recession. The mid-range models add the pressure sensor and a better timer. That's worth upgrading.
The recommendation would be something like the Oral-B Pro 1000 or above.
The Oral-B Pro 1000 is the sweet spot for electric toothbrushes. Around $50 has the pressure sensor, has the 2-minute timer with 30-second quadrant pacing. That plus the Waterpik Aquarius and Daniel's total investment is about $120 for a setup that will last years and is backed by solid evidence. That's less than the cost of a single filling.
When you put it that way, the underinvestment problem becomes pretty stark. People will spend $1,200 on a phone and then cheap out on the tools that prevent $6,000 dental procedures.
It's a failure of salience. The dental procedure is abstract and in the future. The phone is concrete and immediate. Our brains are terrible at this trade-off. That's why having someone lay out the numbers explicitly is useful. $120 now versus potentially thousands later, plus pain, plus time in the chair, plus the risk of infection. It's not a close call.
Daniel, if you're listening, I hope you're taking notes. Waterpik Aquarius, around $70. Vinegar clean once a month. Daily use, low pressure to start, work your way up. And maybe upgrade that toothbrush while you're at it.
Keep track of the charger this time.
The charger does not have legs. It is not wandering around your apartment of its own volition. It's in the drawer, the same drawer you already checked.
The charger is always in the last place you look, because after you find it, you stop looking. That's not philosophy, that's just how searching works.
Deep insights from Herman Poppleberry, and now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
Slovene is one of the few languages that retains the dual grammatical number, meaning it has separate verb and noun forms for exactly two of something. In the 1930s, a linguist documenting the Idelman language on the Kamchatka Peninsula recorded that Idelman had no dual number at all, making it one of the smallest grammatical number systems ever documented in a living language, with only singular and plural.
Here's a forward-looking thought. We've talked about water flossers as a consumer product, but the bigger question Daniel raised is about how we make purchasing decisions in an environment where trust has been systematically eroded. Fake reviews, affiliate-driven recommendations, brands that appear and disappear overnight. The parental heuristic of buy the known brand works for now, but what happens when the known brands realize they can coast on reputation and cut quality? We're already seeing it in some categories. The question is whether we need better institutions, better regulation, better review systems, or just better individual skepticism. Probably all of the above.
I think the answer is that we need to rebuild some of the information infrastructure that used to do this work for us. Consumer Reports still exists and still does good work, but their influence has shrunk. Wirecutter was supposed to be the digital native replacement, but even they've had issues with affiliate-driven bias. There's a gap in the market for trustworthy, evidence-based product recommendations that aren't tied to commissions. Someone should start that company.
But in the meantime, you've got Herman Poppleberry reading clinical dental journals, so you don't have to. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. If you found this useful, leave us a review. It helps other people find the show, and it makes our parents proud.
They're already proud. They just don't understand what a podcast is.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.